the show.
Welcome to this week's Boundless Show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. We're here in the studio, Mott, Steve, and Ashley, and myself. Hi, everyone.
Hey, Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Hey. And as is becoming a habit, we have a VIP again on the line, one of our own listeners, Melanie from Rhode Island. Hello, Melanie.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey. Okay, we like the East Coasters. That's exciting. So, although you're not originally from there, where are you from originally?
Well, I'm also from the East Coast. I'm from Maine. I just migrated southward.
Oh, okay. What part of Maine? One of my best friends just moved there.
North of Bangor, kind of toward the north end.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I think she just moved like north of Portland.
So what town north of Bangor?
Lincoln.
Okay. I spent a summer in Acadia National Park.
Oh, farther north than that.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Well, that is very cool. Okay, well, we have to give Melanie a special shout out because, and we didn't even ask her to do this. She just did it because the Boundless Show is awesome. She wrote to us talking about how her Sunday school class or Sunday morning group at church was actually, they devoted a few weeks to listening to some of our episodes and using them as discussion starters. And like I said, we didn't even pay her to do this. They just decided to do it, which we totally approve of. But then you mentioned, Melanie, that there were additional questions that even came up, and I guess the discussion just went on, and people had all kinds of things to say. So Melanie contacted us really to offer some clarification on one of those questions in particular, and we wanted to address it here in our roundtable, and because we wanted Melanie herself to state it so we knew exactly what she was talking about, we invited her on the show to do so. So Melanie, give us the scoop. What had everyone in a tizzy, and what do you want us to give some further clarification to?
All right. Well, the segment that we listened to was the inbox from episode 63, where you'd had another listener write in and ask about what sort of standards of entertainment should she be expecting from men in a dating relationship? How could she address someone who might be viewing something questionable? And do men in particular have a higher tolerance for, say, violent content over women? And some of the things that came out in our class discussion were that some of the men were a bit defensive of that, saying that it wasn't entirely fair to come down hard on everything just because it has an R rating, if it may be accurate in historical context and serve that purpose, when women are watching plenty of things that may have more benign or, quote, innocent ratings, like a lot of romance movies or soap operas that may be rated by the organization to be PG, but definitely don't reflect Christian standards. So they were kind of hoping for a bit more discussion on that, and also to bring the men into the discussion on whether or not there actually is a higher tolerance between the sexes for different kinds of content in films, because they felt a little bit that it was unfair to have two women discussing how to approach this topic with men without really going into what women are watching that they shouldn't be, and also speaking to the men about how they'd like to have this brought up.
Okay. You know this is just going to be an excuse for Mott and Steve to talk about how they should be able to watch whatever they want. I mean, that's why we shut them out the first time around. Because we're like, you guys are totally desensitized and we can't stand for it. No, I'm just teasing. Well, we are going to go ahead and address that. Though we do have to also give, before we go to that, we do have to make a note of the fact that Melanie is apparently a charter listener to Boundless and reader of Boundless, because you mentioned, tell us about your, about getting the Stay Christian in College kit.
Oh yes. When I graduated from high school, when I was 18 back in 1998, the year everything got started, before I went off to college, my parents gave me that How to Stay Christian in College kit that came in its own little pizza box with a laundry bag and, the book by Professor Theophilus on How to Stay Christian in College and all of the little pamphlets and resources. And I have been addicted to the website ever since.
Oh, that's awesome.
That is so cool.
I think we're going to have to find out, you know, if you're like, we need people to come out of the woodwork. If you were an original Boundless reader and you still have your little kit, or you got one, or you still have your laundry bag. Yeah, I think we need to hear from you.
Yeah, I bet those pizza boxes could go on eBay now for, I don't know, thousands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just send it back to Focus and Steve and Candace will autograph it for you and, you know, or come out here and visit us and, you know, that's awesome. So
that's cool.
Well, thanks so much, Melanie, for kind of giving us some additional legs to this question and giving us an opportunity to clarify. We will go ahead and do that now. So thanks for being on the show.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Okay, guys, so there is the task. Again, in the studio with me is Mott, Steve, and Ashley, and we're going to talk about standards in entertainment, specifically in movies. Let's just kick off by addressing the question that she mentioned there as far as guys having a higher tolerance for certain types of entertainment and certain themes seen in films. What do you guys think?
You know, the first thing that came to mind for me was it is important for men to engage with great stories of men stepping up in hard situations and doing hard things, of taking on challenges. And that was done in another day around a fireplace of men talking about the day or talking about exploits that they or friends or relatives had had. And that's always been a part of how men prepare themselves for certain challenges that they're going to take on. And that what's happened in our day is that those conversations around the fireplace have often been replaced with either really engaging books or, for most people, really engaging movies. And so there is a place that sometimes women don't quite connect with for why guys get into certain war movies, certain movies about real challenging situations. But there's something very important that's taking place there. Now, the problem is when it becomes gratuitous, when the language, when the violence, when the storyline is not moving in a heroic, lay your life down and save your troops and, you know, all this kind of classic storytelling model, and moves into a model of, you know, just gratuitously over and over again taking the Lord's name in vain and using language that, you know, we don't need to be encouraging people to be exposed to over and over again, or getting into too gratuitous sex scenes and those things that are just stuck in your mind that really weren't advancing the storyline at all. And I think in that instance, it is important to separate the great, challenging, engaging stories from those elements that really are gratuitous and not helpful.
Yeah, I think that's great, Steve. I think what women may not understand, in the reason guys get into movies, especially war movies, is every guy asks himself, can he measure up? Will he measure up? Can he do those things that they see portrayed in the movies, especially those historical movies? You take a movie like Saving Private Ryan, and you just every guy wonders if he could be that hero. Is he going to be that sacrificial? Is he going to be the guy who lays down his life for his brother beside him? I mean, think of Band of Brothers too. Lisa, to get back to your point, I am desensitized to violence. It sort of goes over my head. It doesn't affect me. I don't think that's a good thing, though. I think I had a conversation with a Christian brother of mine just a few weeks ago on this very issue, and talking about how I can go see a movie that has violence in it, I'm really not that affected. He said, "Well, is that a good thing?" And it made me think, well, maybe it's not a good thing. He says, "I guarantee you that if you stop watching all kinds of movies that had gratuitous violence in it, the time you do watch it again, you will be sensitive to it." And so, I mean, the question you ask is this type of violence, gratuitous violence, honoring to God? Not if it affects you in a certain way, or if you're desensitized to it. Does it honor God? And is it okay to be desensitized to something like that?
Lisa, going back to the original issue, I think it was something in the context of what kind of concerns should you have about a young man and his viewing habits, and what does this mean with a relationship moving forward? And it seems like even Melanie was saying in their discussion, there were these questions about, well, are you going to hold a standard for men based on a movie being rated R, but then have another standard for women and say it's okay that they're watching PG or PG-13 movies that might have some very suggestive sexual scenes and some context there that's potentially just as harmful? And I agree with that. And I think the key issue for both men and women as they are preparing to grow in the responsibilities God's giving them, to begin thinking about marrying well, that what they're both looking in each other's media habits for is, are the stories that they're consuming going to grow their character, or is it going to suppress it? Is it going to keep them in an adolescent frame of mind, or is it stretching them? Is it bringing out the deeper character that God wants to grow in them? And good stories can do that. Bad stories really can keep people stuck in an adolescent phase, and that's what we should be looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I think it's interesting how, like, for example, for women, we can, and I've done this with my girlfriends before, we can go to a film that, you know, speaking of the sexual nature of things, that has a lot of, like, female, you know, probably has a lot of female nudity, probably a lot of sex, stuff like that. And we don't even notice that or think of it until we hear guys talking about having seen the same movie. And then we're all like awkward and we feel terrible. And we're just like, oh, that's so terrible that he watched that. But really, I think for us, you know, you can get into the comparisons of, it's kind of like the women who read, you know, romance novels versus mm-hmm. guys who just do porn or whatever. It's kind of the female porn. Because what we can start doing is comparing ourselves to them and saying, well, that's the new normal. And then all the conversations that surround that is just like this existence that doesn't even happen. I don't know, Ashley, what do you think?
I agree with that, Lisa. I appreciate that their Sunday school brought up the flip side for women, because you go to these movies and you're right. When I see sex scenes or nudity, I'm not tempted to sin by that, but I am desensitized, like Mott said, to the worldly standards of relationships and of romance, which mm-hmm. are false. I think of Sleepless in Seattle, which I recently saw, and my eyes were opened to the worldview behind that movie. From the opening scene to the very last scene, there was this idea of magic and the soulmate myth that pervaded the entire movie. And I actually laughed out loud at several parts that normally would have, you know, made me swoon or made me go, oh, how sweet. It wasn't sweet. Mm-hmm. It was false. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the danger for women, is that we have this unrealistic expectation of romance mm-hmm. and of what a relationship should look like.
Right, yeah. Do you think, I just wanted to get back, Mott, to what you were saying about being desensitized to violence. So for people that are wondering, I know I as a woman wonder, so how much does that take? What did it take for you to become desensitized? Was this like over years of watching movies, or did you just watch like five super bad movies and now you're like, meh?
I think getting back to Melanie's original point, I think guys just innately are more desensitized to violence because of the way God made us, because of what Steve said earlier, is that we have a different role in this life than women. We are the protector. I mean, we go to war. Women don't go to war. I mean, well, they used to not go to war. And they're really not on the front lines now. I think it's true that we are just generally desensitized to violence in that way. But, you know, the other types of violence, I mean, I was a non-Christian growing up. I went to see Friday the 13th when I was probably 16 or 17 years old. So I grew up on slasher films. I mean, I've seen it all in terms of violence. And so, yeah, over a period of 20 years, I've been desensitized to violence. And so it just doesn't affect me like it should. I mean, I should be sensitive to it. Now, I liken it. We get a lot of comments on Boundless that from guys who say, oh, I'm desensitized to nudity. I can see a nude woman and appreciate the artistic value of it. And I would say you shouldn't be desensitized to that. Mm-hmm. And the way I liken the violence versus nudity or sex is almost like alcohol versus marijuana argument in legalization. Marijuana is just more potent. I can remember seeing nude films or nude scenes or sex scenes from just about every film I've seen. I don't remember the killings or the specific scenes of violence. I mean, it affects guys differently. And that's the point I wanted to get across. You know, maybe women don't understand that, but yeah, if you see a nude scene or a sex scene, I remember that. I can remember that when I was a teenager, and I can't remember violence in the same way.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, this reminds me a little bit of the modesty argument going on that we always hear. You know, girls say, "Well, I'm not responsible for your sin and where you take seeing certain images," and conversely, you see men saying, "Oh, well, I'm not responsible for how you interpret my actions or the way that I single you out." And I think this is another area where we can help each other across the genders, is women can help men by not saying, "Oh, will you please go see this chick flick with me? You know, and it's rated PG. It's really not that bad." I know there's a couple times that I've done that to Brian. I've talked him into watching, you know, some chick flick movie. And then halfway through the movie realized, oh, I bet there's some scenes in this movie that don't affect me at all, but probably aren't very helpful to Brian. Mm-hmm. I think about a time when I was a freshman in college. I went on a blind date to see the Saw, one of the Saw films. Mm. I still have flashbacks of that movie. There were scenes that I will never forget, and I can tell you, I never went on a second date with that guy. but I think this is an area where we can help each other and be sensitive to each other.
Yeah. Okay. That would be, do not go on dates with guys who suggest horror films. So that's a relationship tip for you right there. Good thing you're engaged now. You don't have to deal with that anymore. But yeah, and guys, don't take girls to horror flicks. And don't be watching them yourself. That's lame. Anyway, that's just my advice for you. Okay, I just want to quickly touch on, we talked about violence, we talked about sexuality. I want to talk about language for just a minute here. Because lots of people will say, I hear language in the office all day. It's not any different to me. And, you know, someone has to drop this language to really illustrate their character or their the depth of their depravity or whatever. What do you guys think about language?
Well, it's interesting that I, since becoming a Christian, I am more sensitive to language than I am violence. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because I stopped using language. Not that I use violence, but I stopped using language in my personal life, or not language, but bad language, crude language. And I started viewing sex in a different way. I mean, the Holy Spirit entered my life and changed my views on those two issues. And not that he hasn't changed my views on violence, but something is different about that. Maybe it's this suspension of disbelief that I can go into a movie and know that that's just a movie. You know, some guy shoots a guy and he's not really dead. But I haven't really figured that out, why I'm desensitized to violence and very sensitive to language and very sensitive to sex and nudity.
Well, you know, I think it comes back to the issue of just how much do you need to tolerate in order to get the benefits of a good story, and that there are good stories. We have a favorite Winston Churchill movie, The Gathering Storm, and he uses a lot of language that we actually thought was pretty cute and repeated some until a friend of ours from the UK was saying, I don't think you have any idea what you're saying, because that's like the British F word or something. Mm-hmm. And so we recognized that was who Churchill was, and, you know, like these guys were mentioning in that discussion group, there's a certain historical context that's valuable there. But it does go back to the issue of you've got to make a call as a discerning Christian. In order to get the story here, how much should I expose myself to in terms of language, violence, and sexuality? And that's why the plugged-in movie service that we have here at Focus is valuable. At least it gives people an objective sense of, okay, in order to get these redemptive messages from this movie, here's what you're going to be sitting through in terms of language, violence, and sexuality. And that's where I tell you, I know it's probably not attractive for a 20, 30-something, especially a single, to go pick up something like ClearPlay DVD, but it sure is nice to have options out there of services like that that can cut those pieces out of a good story so you can enjoy the story without that exposure.
Well, that's good. I was actually on a committee or in a committee meeting last night at church, and I was talking with several of the older folks on the committee about growing up in a home where I don't remember us watching a lot of TV, because if there was one word dropped, we had to turn it off. So we'd always like hopeful. We'd try to distract my parents so that they'd be in another room so we could let a couple things slip by. But otherwise, we just watched Little House on the Prairie and The Muppet Show. But but anyway, yeah. But now, I mean, if there's any kind of like, especially the GDs and the JCs when they drop, you know, I just like cringe. Mm-hmm. And so I think pluggedinonline.com is a great resource, like you said, Steve, for folks to just really parse a lot of that out and make those decisions, because that stuff, you know, makes me uncomfortable. Unless it's in like a Tyler Perry film, and then I have a totally other standard, which is inappropriate. I don't know why that is. I just think that he can, you know, I don't know. I need to deal with that. So anywho, but any other comments before we close? I think these are good thoughts. And hopefully, Melanie, this will help you and your friends there at church. As always, we want to hear from you. Please do write to us at editor@boundless.org so that we can continue to clarify any of these conversations that we're having, especially if you need a different gender's perspective on the issue at hand. So thanks, everyone, for weighing in on this.
Thanks, Lisa.
So dark and so deep was my life, but but now I found you. And you're the source of all that's good in my life. And everyone should know what this feels like. So let it be known.
This edition of the Culture Segment, and in lieu of Lisa, today you've got Candace and Steve, and we're joined by a very special guest and a good friend of Boundless, Gary Thomas. Gary, welcome back to the Boundless Show.
Oh, it's great to be back. Thank
it's
you.
So good to have you here. Gary's here for a conference, and we somehow managed to get all the big people in charge of his schedule to give us a few minutes, and so we're glad to have him back with us. As you may remember, he was here for two shows, and so this will officially be his third show, and today we're going to talk about a book that's not new, but it has a new title. And so what was The Beautiful Fight will be coming out newly improved, at least title and cover-wise, from Zondervan. It's called Wholly Available, and it's got a very interesting subtitle, What If Holiness Is About More Than What We Don't Do? So, Gary, tell us about this book, and especially the new title.
Wholly Available begins H-O-L-Y, if people are wondering. And the implication is what it means to be holy is to be available to God. And more specifically, how do I give up the members of my body to be available to be used by God wherever I am, whether I'm walking into a Starbucks, whether I'm walking into a classroom, whether I'm returning home, wherever I might be, how on a moment-by-moment basis am I, elsewhere in the book I call it God Oasis, a place where mm-hmm. God can bring people to me, ultimately to meet Him. And the subtitle, Holiness Is About More Than What We Don't Do, tries to counteract, I think, a prevailing notion that most people have of holiness, that it the holier you are, the more things you don't do. Mm-hmm. And to grow in holiness, you add to your list of what you don't do, the words you don't say, the places you don't go, the things you don't look at. And while that is an element, I think, of becoming set apart for God, the equally important element is not what you turn away from, but what you embrace and turn toward.
You know, Gary, one thing I like about that idea is that I have a twin brother and we're very different. And there was a long season in which he looked at me and thought I was the biggest saint because I didn't do all these things that he was doing. And he didn't realize how difficult it was for me to actually make myself fully available to go do the things that I felt God would have me to do. And it seems like it opens up a whole new area of Christian growth to move above and beyond the just say no to certain things, to just say yes to our eyes and our ears and our minds and about everything being fully available for what God would call us to do. Yeah. But I picked up reading your book, that's not easy. I mean, that's what I found. And you used the phrase, the beautiful fight. So how did that come about?
Well, actually, I cribbed that from an Eastern Orthodox monk who Paul says, I fought the good fight. He says, that's really not strong enough in the Greek. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful fight. And I loved putting those words together because it is a fight. It's a struggle. But there's beauty in it when you understand the purpose. And I like putting those two ideas together and holding them because I think they do explain each other and give a new glimpse that a lot of Christians aren't involved in the fight.
Yeah.
They only see fights as something negative. They see it as the struggle. They don't see the glory behind it. And Paul gloried in, I have fought, he says, the beautiful fight near the end of his life. He's saying that there's no other life I would have but being involved in this fight. And I just want more people to become available to God to be participating in the fight.
I think we all know people who are defined by what they don't do. And frankly, they can be a little bit stodgy or even
yes.
boring. This message sounds like it goes way beyond boring into extremely exciting.
Yeah. Well, and I found the negative approach is so frustrating to younger believers. It's often what makes them just give up and stop trying. Because if you define yourself by what you don't do and you pick out any particular sin, I'm not going to swear, whatever you want to define it as, and then you hit, you know, you stub your toe or something, it comes out. Then you're back at square one when you do it again.
Yeah.
And how do you have transformation when you know you're never going to be morally perfect? And if people think that Christianity is about becoming morally perfect, it's like, well, it's too hard for me. I can't do that.
Well, and on top of that, you've got all these Christian self-improvement books that talk about how we can be, you know, perfectly positioned to be an outreach to this culture and doing this for the technology area and do this to be better marketers. And I tell you, as I survey a lot of those books, as I've tried to read a lot of them and go to the conferences, I almost feel like I did when I first started trying to learn to play golf. And you've got somebody saying, okay, do this with your grip and do this with your back and do this with your feet and your swing. And all of a sudden, you're not even enjoying the game
yeah.
and you're not hitting any balls on the green
yeah.
because you're just all twisted and contorted with all the what you should do and shouldn't do. And I've just enjoyed reading The Beautiful Fight and realize it can be a lot more natural than that.
What I found liberating about this view is that it's simply about trying to align yourself with what God is already doing. Mm-hmm. It's not just serving Him, but it's being used by Him. And so when I'm talking with someone, it's, what is God doing in this person's life? And then I'm listening, God, what would you want to say to them? And to pause and to think, okay, I don't want to just give them my opinion. Is this a time when God would really want to speak in that person's life? Now, I don't want to overstate this, because sometimes I'll listen for God's direction. And I get nothing, you know? And so I'm not talking about, I'm living in this cloud, I just pause and the word comes down from heaven or a dove hands me the next book I'm supposed to write, you know, or something. It's not like that. But I do think it's something we can grow in.
Mm.
Saying, Lord, I want my heart to be opened up that I don't think I'm caring about the things you care about. I think I'm letting my heart be stolen about what's happening to my 401k, what's happening with this relationship, am I being appreciated here? I don't want my heart to be set on small things. Lord, give me your heart. And I don't want my mind to be taken up with trivial things. I don't want the New York Times or Time Magazine to determine what I'm thinking about. I want you to determine what I think about. Mm-hmm. That's what I find liberating. It's not trying to live up to a standard as much as it is, God, I want you to live through me. I want you to think with my mind, see with my eyes, help me hear with your ears.
So it sounds like it's a lot about avoiding distractions from the main thing.
Absolutely. It's what is God doing at this point in time? And there's a simplicity to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, for instance, the goal, Steve, you mentioned the whole golfing thing. The goal is to get the ball in the hole. And as we know, Tiger's going to get the ball in the hole very differently than you and I are going to get the ball in the hole. We're going to take a little longer tour. But ultimately, the goal is simply, it's a simplistic one. What does it mean to serve God in this moment, in this person's life? And we may make mistakes, but God's not keeping score on that end. Am I making myself available to Him? And it's something I can grow in. I can come off a plane, for instance, sometimes and say, you know what? Not one moment in that five-hour plane ride did I think, God, what do you want to say to any of these people? Mm-hmm. How can I be? Is there somebody I need to pray for? Do you want me to talk to? I've been completely self-absorbed the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of being discouraged, just saying, I'm sorry, I want to make myself available to you now on the ride home or where I'm going. And so for me, it helps me overcome the discouragement because my sin does keep rearing its ugly head in many mm-hmm. different ways. And if I focus on holiness about what I don't do, I'd be buried in one day with despair. But this gives me possibility for the future. Okay, Lord, I let that opportunity slip by. That pitch got by me. Where's the next pitch coming from?
Is holy living a byproduct, though? I mean, do you see that when you're focused like this on God's plan for the next hour with the people sitting beside you, that you're less inclined to use your example, swear or...
Oh, you see, Candace, I think that's exactly the point. And part of the reason I wrote what was originally Beautiful Fight, which is now Wholly Available, was wanting to make sanctification or the doctrine of holiness available to my kids in a way that was practical for them to understand. And here's a great case in my son's life where he was at a theology camp one time. They actually used to have those. It kind of went out of business, not surprisingly. But it was a great camp where they would just teach doctrine and they had a track for worship leaders and leadership and Bible study and whatnot. And he was in the leadership track. So he was leading this meeting. This one young gal stepped out and it did not go well for her. It bordered on humiliation. It was uncomfortable for everybody. Now, I wasn't there, but it was one of the theology professors who told me what had happened. He said, Gary, I wish you could have seen it because your son saw what was happening. And he stepped in. He used a little self-deprecating humor to break the tension and everybody laughed. He said something very affirming and really built this young woman up. So she's at the end, we thought we would never get her in front of a group again. Mm-hmm. And now she's smiling. He said, just to see God use a young man like that was so inspiring. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to say, Graham learning that God could speak to him. Graham, this isn't going well. I'm choosing you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use your tongue. You're going to say this. I want you to hear what's going on. I'm going to use your, I'm going to give, fill your mind with my thoughts. You have a heart, so you care what's happening. So this could be disastrous now. It could be a positive thing. Being used by God, I would say, did far more to cement his faith than three lectures on, Graham, don't listen to this music with your ears. Yeah. Don't say these swear words. Don't think these thoughts. It's, Graham, God can use you. Mm-hmm. God can use you right now. He can use you today. I think we were designed for that. And if our kids get a taste of it, then sin loses its appeal, at least some of it.
Gary, I like what you talk about transformation, that I think about how many people talk about how we need to rebrand Christianity and let people see Jesus differently by how we act and the things we say. And you talk about how what we really need is to have transformed lives where people will see Christ in us, that Christ can do the job himself when we kind of get out of the way and people are, we're being transparent enough that they see him through us. But what are some ways that we often deny the ability for God to be seen through us by not having transformed lives?
See, there's a verse that has scared me for most of my life. I wouldn't put it in books because it sounded so New Age-ish or it just didn't sound Christian, but it's the Bible, so it's safe.
You're pretty safe.
But I think it directly addresses what you're saying. It's 2 Peter 1:3-4, when it says, his divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness. And I just want to pause there before I go on because it doesn't answer your question yet. But what this is saying, everybody listening to our voice, if they know Jesus Christ, has everything they need to truly be transformed. And the transformation is deeper than what we could imagine. It says through our knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and goodness. So it's through our knowledge that they have that ability. Through these, he has given us his very great and precious promises so that through them, here's what freaked me out, you may participate in the divine nature and escape the corruption in the world caused by evil desires. Another version is partakers of the divine nature. You know, and that almost, and he's not saying that we have a spark of the deity in us, but he's saying the presence of God in our life is so powerful that we are literally transformed, become participators in the divine nature. What people need is not a rebranding. We just need to let Christ be Christ in us.
Yeah.
But this sounds too mystical to some, and so we've reduced it to moral rules, and which again, there's a place for moral rules. I'm not talking those down, but things that we can control. When so often we know that God moves in ways that we can't control. And he can use our failings as well as our strengths. And, you know, I've shocked some pastors because I've said to them, sometimes I think you take yourself too seriously with your sermon. And they, well, how can you take a sermon too seriously? And I said, if we have this view that God is building his church, he can begin to speak to them. Maybe they hear something on the radio that really sparks a thought. they read a line in a book that kind of reinforces that. They have a conversation with their friend at Starbucks, mm-hmm. and that theme kind of comes up. And then we lay out this sermon that sort of really explains what God has been saying. I said, you know, our sermon is one cog in that machine that God is building to transform them, but it's just a cog. And we need to have more appreciation that God is building his church. And our sermon is a tool he uses.
Yeah.
But he's using conversations. He's using frustrations. You know, have you ever had this where every driver you're behind is going 8 miles below the speed limit? And I mean, you know, these things just happen, and it's God's, you know, you're going to grow in patience whether you want to or not at times. And so it's just opening up our eyes to the activity of God. Holy Available is trying to get us away from religion to, I guess the mission statement I had for this book is that I believe God wants to raise the level of expectation for his presence and activity in the life of every believer. God is intensely active. His transforming power is very real, and it's just getting us to expect that rather than see that as the exception of the real unusual saints. It should be the everyday experience of every believer, because Peter says it's available to every one of us.
So you're saying that the young single gal listening, the single young man listening, can be animated every minute of every day by being in touch with the divine and praying, Lord, what do you have right this moment for me?
Right. What do you want me to say? And sometimes you might not speak to them at all. You just pray for them.
So
sometimes God might give you a word for them, or you just ask them questions, or just being there, just being available for them. And like I said, this being available, wholly available, means it's not a guarantee that God will use me. But my responsibility is to make myself available if he wants to use me. And if he chooses not, there's some people I really wanted to help. I had nothing for them.
Yeah.
But I don't control it. And so I'm like, one image I had right before I got up to speak is I'm really just this leaky, rusty faucet. But God, it's the purity of the water that gushes through. Mm. And I'm just saying, God, turn on the faucet. You know, because it's not about the faucet that you're after. You want that pure water. And I don't control whether God turns the water on or not.
Yeah.
But that takes a lot of pressure off me to perform, because I'm still really growing in this area. By no means do I feel like I've mastered this.
Mm-hmm. What's the connection between the book and this message and the charge we have in Scripture to pray without ceasing?
I think it just gives feet to our prayer, that we become the answer to our prayers in some regard. When we pray for someone, God may say, I want to help this person, and I'm going to use you to help them. There's been a long debate throughout Christian spirituality on the active life or the contemplative life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a false debate.
Hmm.
I think prayer leads us to work. Work leads us to prayer. They complement each other. They build each other up in the healthy Christian life. And so If I'm ministering on a constant basis, I'm praying on a constant basis. Lord, what do I say? What do you have to say?
And you don't have to be a pastor to be in that role, right? I mean, it's anybody in any job who has beneath the surface an ongoing conversation with the Lord.
Absolutely. You know, I just spoke to a conference that dealt only with professional football players. Never have I felt so tiny in a room. They were baptizing some of these guys. They had to go to the deep end of the pool. One of these guys, I'm not, he's like 6'8",
oh,
probably
man.
350. And the normal part of the pool wasn't deep enough to get him wet. I mean, that's how big these guys were.
It displaced half the pool.
Right. But we talked about the opportunities they had. Mm-hmm. When they're signing autographs, what can they do to represent Christ? Mm-hmm. When they go to appearances, when they know a rookie's been cut, mm-hmm. when they know a coach is having a tough day, when they come home from a trip and they know they're going to a wife and maybe she's watched their kids, or when they have a girlfriend and you're saying, how are you building her up in the Lord? In every area of your life, how are you available to be used by God? And I would say in some ways these football players have more opportunities than a pastor who might be in his study 5 days out of the week.
Yeah. Gary, can I ask a favor? We've got people all over the map spiritually, people who have sometimes maybe, I like to use the phrase sloppy agape. They just feel like they're just making a mess when they try to live out their faith. We've got other people who are new to the faith and aren't quite sure where to dive in. And some people who have grown up in legalistic homes and really have been immersed in the don't do side of Christianity, and considering that range of people out there, can you wrap up this time with a prayer for our listeners?
I'd love to do it. Father, I thank you for the truth of your gospel. I thank you that you taught us to pray to you as Father, that we're not defined by our sin, that you could call a murderer and an adulterer named David a man after your own heart, because he was actively engaged in the beautiful fight of building your kingdom. And there are some men and women out there today, Lord, who feel like they could never be called a man or a woman after your own heart, given what they've done. I pray that the reality of how you view David and how you view us would come home to them. Lord, jumpstart our hearts. They've been deadened by looking at just what we don't do. Let us see this not as a heavy obligation, but Lord, really as just a springboard for excitement and enthusiasm, how you can take the most mundane moment and infuse it with divine possibility when we surrender to be used by you. All of us, Lord, are leaky, rusty faucets, but it's your pure water that matters, that water flowing through us. So teach us how to let you turn us on to get out of the way and let you be glorified in building your church in your way, through very imperfect people. We pray in your Son's name, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to share with us today from your heart, from your book, to speak God's truth to us and to cover us with your prayer. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Candace. I mean, this challenged me, this truth. I try to live with it every day. And if it could encourage anybody else, I'd be thrilled to hear that.
Well, come back next time you're in town.
Will do.
Okay.
This week's Inbox. I'm in the studio with Ashley. Ashley, welcome.
Hey, Lisa. Thank you.
Okay, so we're actually going to talk about my recent blog post called What's Your Line, where I talked about pickup lines, because people have just been blazing away with comments and their own little scenarios. And I just didn't think. I thought I was just going to throw out an experience there, some comments, and hopefully solicit some advice or just, you know, some thoughts, especially from the men, on what are you hoping to kind of accomplish with doing something like that? Or is it only, you know, creepy guys that hang out in malls that do this kind of stuff? So anyway, I thought I would bring Ashley in the studio just to talk about what, you know, kind of what we feel is some of the reasons for those experiences, maybe throw out some questions to some of you out there, and you can continue the conversation there at our blog. But I don't know. I mean, Ashley, what was your first thought kind of when you read the blog, as far as, I mean, other than why were you in the mall at lunch?
But when I read the blog, I just had to laugh because I worked in customer service for a long time at a bank. And when you're in customer service, I think anyone out there who does will probably recognize this. Male customers will oftentimes come in and see you as a target of someone they can get their significance from on how they interact with you. Mm. And so I resonated with a lot of the comments, a lot of the stories they left. And it was comical, but it was also interesting to see the theme of, this is really uncomfortable and I don't know how to respond to this. Mm-hmm. And so some of my initial thoughts were, if this really is a tactic to get to know someone or to express interest, the wrong way to go about it is to put someone in a situation where they are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I think about Michael Lawrence's article on Boundless, Real Men Risk Rejection. And part of his heart in the article is, real men set up a situation for a woman where she's comfortable, where she's safe, where she can respond. And a pickup line, in my opinion, is the absolute opposite of that. You said yourself, you didn't know how to respond to that guy. You were uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. At first, you stuttered and said, what? Excuse me?
Yeah. Yeah. And if someone who's as extroverted as I am and who has a degree in communications can't even respond to that, then it's kind of, that's what I thought to myself. I'm like, why do I always find myself in these situations? And I just am like, you know, I mean, I think to myself, if I would have had like another 30 seconds, I could have, you know, maybe come back with a retort. And usually it's not difficult for me to, but I try to walk that fine line between honoring the boldness, like mm-hmm. I mentioned in the post, and then being like, "Wow, are you really crazy?" Because I think for me, and I want to say this because a lot of the women in the on the post were weighing in on this. I am all about compliments, so I don't want to shut you guys down, like you guys out there, as far as like giving a woman a compliment or mm-hmm. being willing to step up and say, you know what, even flattery, I mean, you know, sketchy guys out there who just use the obvious flattery, sometimes it can just be funny and cute. And if they're trying to put it out there, I mean, none of us are relationship experts. I'm okay with that too. But it did just stymie me as to where did this guy think that was going to go? Because mm-hmm. I was like walking, he was walking. And that's why I used it kind of in contrast to my car dial experience, where I was like, that was really smooth because that guy started a conversation with me. And it was just more of a, I mean, unfortunate that he was married, but yeah. That is another inbox, man, that we need to deal with. But well, yeah, so I don't know. It's kind of that balance between I want to affirm the guys out there who are willing to just be kind and chivalrous and step up and give a compliment, but at the same time weigh what's really going to be effective.
I see this coming down to motive, Lisa, because I think a lot of times the motives with, quote, pickup lines is insecurity. Because when a guy throws something out at you like, hey, you must be tired because you've been running through my mind all day long, that's not mm-hmm. out of a place of sincerity. That's out of a place of insecurity. And they're looking for something that you're going to say that's going to make them feel good about themselves. And I think that there is a way that women can respond to that can either fuel that cycle of insecurity, or you can really help them move forward. Mm-hmm. And that's a generous thing to do as a woman. That's a gracious thing to do as a woman. I don't think that's your responsibility if someone has posed a very insincere question or comment to you. But I know that in my ministry at college, I was involved in a Christian ministry, and there was a guy who always had a pickup line. He always had some sort of, you know, clever thing to say when he saw you. And for a couple months, my response was always to brush him off and to respond with something really snarky. And I eventually realized that he didn't have bad intentions, but he was insecure. And so I began to address him differently by just answering his question and then asking him something about himself. And eventually, after doing that for a while, I got to the place where I could just speak truth to him and say, you don't have to play the hero. You don't have to be insincere. You can just ask me a question about myself. And it really opened up an avenue for me to get to know this guy, to encourage him and who he really is. Because that's what it comes down to. Insincerity is being afraid to put your real self out there. And if someone's not willing to be real with me up front in first meeting them, then I don't really have a lot of interest in what else they have to say.
Yeah. I do have to say that I loved the sample, the Christian pickup lines that I think some dude, and I think there was someone else weighed in with some of them, like the, I was like laughing out loud. I went out to lunch with friends on Sunday and I was reading through some of them for them, like the, how would you like to join my purpose-driven life, and you know, nice Bible and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that was just totally hilarious. But yeah, I mean, I think it's like walking a fine line, because there's that element of, you know, we women will often find ourselves griping about guys who aren't direct enough and aren't taking enough opportunities and aren't putting themselves out there. And I find, and I've talked about this with a guy I dated in the past who said that really a lot of the non-Christian guys are very well practiced at it, because they're used to doing it just to, quote unquote, hit on someone or to get a hookup. But they do it very often and become more and more comfortable with it. Whereas Christian guys, and this is what we Christian women criticize, you know, wait 10 years observing this person, and they have to go out, you know, with 30 people or more to pizza 12 or 13 times before, you know, before they can ever say one word to her. And it's kind of like, hello, we are aging over here. So it's kind of that, you know, like I said, and I think I wanted to just spend some time affirming guys who can do that and who can step up and do that. But like you said, it is about motive in that sense.
There's a difference, Lisa, between a compliment and a pickup line.
Right.
A compliment is coming from, I know something about you. I'm complimenting something that I've taken time to observe. Mm-hmm. And a pickup line is, hey, I saw you across the room and thought you had nice eyes. Mm-hmm. Well, right. Actually, I didn't even see your eyes. I'm just saying that to get you to talk to me.
Exactly. So what do you think, I mean, what would be for guys who are out there who want to, I'll just say, to use a cultural term, who want to step up their game and want to, obviously, you know, we condone here, encourage people just asking women out, you know, just pursue someone, ask her out. Do that. How can a guy do that then with confidence without resorting to the cheesy, or, you know, the worst that we've talked about before is just asking a friend of a friend of a friend to find out if maybe she likes you and coming back circuitously with that?
Lisa, I would say the best thing is just to take a genuine interest in the other person. I mean, that's the basics of a conversation, is to be generally interested in who the other person is. I think about Philippians 2:20, where Paul, he esteems Timothy, and he says, you know, I've sent Timothy to you because he had a genuine interest in your welfare. And I know that that's a whole different thing. That's, you know, about Timothy being a spiritual leader in the church. But I think that goes for Christian men in general. That's a great quality, to have someone take a general interest, or a genuine interest, rather, in just who you are. Mm-hmm. And if in that conversation of getting to know you, they appreciate a characteristic about you, then yes, esteem that. Yeah. And I wouldn't say that it's necessary to always deliver compliments, to always think you have to say something clever. That comes with time. And personally, I would appreciate more someone wanting to know me than just thinking of nice things to say to me.
Right. Well, and I think, too, there's a lesson here in that, whereas women, you know, we're going to have to resign ourselves to realizing that, you know, for every 30 pickup lines we get from someone, or some, you know, some weirdness, like a situation we can't really ferret out, there will be one nice guy out there who does it right and who approaches us directly and who is a believer and stuff like that. And in the same way, and I think it was a guy on the post who reminded the men of this, that guys, it's okay to be rejected, and realize that you're going to go out there and you may say something, you may ask a girl out. Just be, you know, you're going to get rejected. And I guess, I mean, it sounds ridiculous coming from a woman, but, you know, it's part of being a man, and it's just comes with the territory. But where the non-Christian guys, and quite frankly, some of the scary ones, get it right is they become more and more confident in that because they're okay with the rejection. You know, for them, the risk is a lot less and they're going for a lot less, but at the same time, they're going to get a lot less. And so if Christian guys, you know, jump out there in boldness, I think we'd see a lot of cool things happen. But
and Lisa, I want to esteem with you those men who are willing to initiate conversation and who are willing to, you know, step up. I think that there's a lot to be said for those men. And I want to clarify that I don't think all pickup lines are creepy. I think mm-hmm. it depends on the personality of the person receiving it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that my roommate is really fun. She's really easygoing. And I would think that if a guy came up to her and, you know, used a corny pickup line, if he got her to laugh, mm-hmm. she would give him the time of day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she would appreciate that. Whereas exactly. I'm a serious person. And so I would just totally write that person off. And so that's the problem with pickup lines is you don't, if you're approaching someone cold, you don't know how they're going to respond.
Right. And again, I think there's another lesson here, and it is, folks, do not assume that just because you're, you know, initiating or approaching someone that it can't, I mean, it can just be about coffee. It can just be stopping for a half hour and grabbing a cup of coffee. I mean, I'm so tired of all these people with their fears about, you know, we're going to go do coffee and then she's going to pull me over to Macy's to pick out China. I mean, it's not. You're driving. Don't make her do that. I mean, and ladies, stop being weird and, you know, stop getting all crazy and talking about how many kids you want. I mean, it's just, hello, common sense, people. So anyway, those are just some ideas. Well, hopefully the conversation will continue on the post. And of course, Tom, Nevin, bless his heart, gave a little follow-up one with his own little experience. But he's married now, so he's safe. So his wife took him. So, well, Ashley, thanks.
Yeah, Lisa, thanks for having me. This was fun.
It was very fun. So, well, again, we want to hear from you. We always want to get your feedback. Write to us at editor@balnes.org, not only with your questions and comments and concerns, but also with any scenarios that you've come across that maybe we can offer some insight towards with our little aggregate group here of insight. So make sure that you're in touch with us. We want to hear from you. This week's music has been provided by Heather Mangum. Make sure that you check it out here. It's been sampled throughout the podcast. Until next week, for The Boundless Show, I'm your host, Lisa Anderson.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.